Okay, so when we talk about nutrient availability in reclaimed ecosystems, and specifically after oil sands mining in the northern boreal forest of Alberta. So just a brief introduction to the area. It's a little bit different than the other areas we've been hearing about this morning. But a few of the things is this is northern Alberta. It's the boreal forest. It tends to be quite cold. The average temperature is just over freezing. It's also quite dry. We get about 450 millimeters precipitation a year. And we also get a lot of big disturbance, both natural disturbances and anthropogenic disturbances. So that figure on the left-hand side there, or the, your right-hand side, I guess, it's a map of the area. So the top orange figure there is a Richardson fire from 2011. It was about 575,000 hectare fire. And the redder one at the bottom there is the fire from this spring, the McMurray fire, about 530,000 hectares. It was the fire that forced evacuation of Fort McMurray. About 80,000 people had to leave their homes for a couple months. And right in between those, sandwiched in between them, is we have the mineable oil sands region. So we have seven active mines going there now and many more to follow in the future if things continue on as they currently are. But the idea with that is we get lots of disturbances, both natural and anthropogenic disturbances. In terms of the forest that we're dealing with, in the northern areas, we have mostly a jack pine forest growing on sandy soils and septosols. And then a little bit further south and further to the west, we get more mixed wood forests, so aspen spruce forests on alfisols, and wetland forests, so bogs, fens, black spruce, tamarack forests on organic soils. And those bottom two, the mixed wood soils and the wetland soils, the organic soils, that's what's getting used in our reclamation. So in the mineable areas, we have these anthroposols, the completely reconstructed soils, and that they're based on, they're made up of these, of our natural soils. That's what gets used. But it is just a bit of an introduction to the area that we're dealing with there. So often we've heard this concept of, disturbance severity. And with fires, with the natural disturbance, you have this range of severities. But really that all kind of pales in comparison to the disturbance, the severity of oil sands mining and reclamation, where we've completely dug up the site and completely altered the soil afterwards. So the oil sands mining and reclamation is a much greater disturbance severity than any of the fires we would ever see. But that being said, that's our the comparison that we're using to look at ecosystem development after these disturbances. We're looking at comparison between anthropogenic and natural disturbances. So kind of a quick introduction to oil sands reclamation. The main goal is to produce safe, stable, non-polluting landforms. And more of an ecological bend on that is we're trying to have boreal forest ecosystems. So we're trying to get back to some sort of a boreal forest ecosystem. What was there before the disturbance won't necessarily, or almost for sure won't be, what's there afterwards, but there's still the idea is to get back to some sort of a boreal forest ecosystem after mining and reclamation. So in terms of the actual reclamation processes, what happens is tailing sand or overburden dumps are often, they're contoured and then capped with the reclamation soil. And the two main types of reclamation soil that get used are what we refer to as peat mineral mix, which is wetland origin. So it's the peat soil and any of the underlying mineral soil gets mixed up and used in reclamation. And the other one is the forest floor mineral mix. And that's from the upland mixed with forest mainly. But that's where we have kind of the forest floor, the O horizon, the underlying A, and part of the B horizons usually gets all mixed up, salvaged as the mine is progressing. That gets salvaged and then put onto the reclamation areas. So those are the two main types of soils that get used in oil sands reclamation. And for the next few talks here, we're all going to be talking about oil sands reclamation. And two of the big questions that we're all dealing with are, how do we build a forest soil? And then how do we know if we're successful? How do we measure that afterwards? So we're going to touch on some of those talks here this morning. So the project that I'm going to be talking about is based on an operational reclamation area in oil sands mine north of Fort McMurray. It is about a 90 hectare reclamation area. It's an overburden dump, which has a different two different soil types on it. So it has both the forest floor soils and the peat mineral mix soils. We also have two fertilization treatments. Either it was fertilized or it wasn't fertilized. It's kind of a 2x2 design there. And what we're measuring, what I'm going to talk about today, we're measuring lots of things. What I'm going to be talking about today is kind of the nutrient supply rate. So we use PRS probes to measure nutrient supply rates over three growing seasons, so three different years, in each of these soils. We measured the nutrients in the top about 10 centimeters of soil, I guess. So we're focusing really on the surface layer. And the other part of our study is we have these natural benchmark comparisons. So this site now is 6 years old. It was established in 2011, which is the same year that massive Richardson fire was. So we're actually being able to use that the fire disturbed sites that are exactly the same age as our reclaimed sites. So it's kind of a nice temporal comparison, nice being able to compare to something that's at the same successional stage. So we're comparing our benchmarks that we're looking at here are looking at the recently disturbed, as well as we have some mature mixed with forests as well that we're looking at. And the questions that we're looking at are how does nutrient bioavailability differ in these different reclaimed soil types? How does it differ between each other as well as to the natural soils? What's the impact of fertilization on the soils? And how do they change over time? Okay, so just looking at a few of the individual nutrients here. So each of these figures is an individual one of the nutrients measured using the PRS probes. And the bottom are the different soil types. So the first four are the reclamation soils. The last two are the natural benchmark soils. And then each of the different color bars is a different year. So we measured over 3 years. So this is, but start with phosphorus and potassium. What we found was that in the much higher levels of available phosphorus and potassium in the natural soils compared to the reclamation soils. All of the reclamation soils were quite low in phosphorus and potassium, and the natural soils were quite high. I think part of that is we've taken this natural soil, which has naturally developed horizons over the last 10,000 years, and start accumulating these nutrients probably in the higher upper profile, and then we've taken and mixed it all up and put it on a reclamation area. So we've kind of diluted it, and we also have taken the B horizon to have a lot of calcium in it. I think we're it's binding with the phosphorus and just making it unavailable, perhaps, in the reclamation soils. Sulfur is the opposite of that, in which our sulfur is much higher in the reclaimed soils and quite low in our natural soils. And the other one we looked at was nitrogen, and nitrogen we often think of as really the limiting factor in boreal forest. What we found is that the available nitrogen really didn't differ depending on soil types. So it didn't matter if it was reclaimed or natural, didn't matter if it was peat-based or upland forest soil-based. It really had minimal impacts on the nitrogen levels in the soil. What did have an impact was fertilization. You fertilize, you get a huge spike in nitrogen, but that was really a very temporary effect. After the first year, it was back down to the the other levels, the regular levels after that first year of fertilization. So it wasn't very responsive to soil treatments, and so likely something else is probably controlling that rather than in the soil solution, rather than just the soil types themselves. And one of the things is in this area, there is a lot of nitrogen deposition. So this is a heavily industrialized area. Normally in Western Canada, we don't talk about acid rain a whole bunch, but this is one area where we do get a lot of it. So we're getting a lot of nitrogen deposition in the area, so that may have a bigger effect than some of the actual soils on available nitrogen. So the part with nitrogen we looked at was the ratio of nitrate to ammonium. What we saw is with fertilization, we got a huge spike in nitrate, but then after a couple years, it was back down to the kind of baseline or benchmark rate of about 30% nitrate. The rest of the nitrogen is in ammonium. So it really, again, the nitrogen the fertilization had a very fleeting effect, I guess, on the nitrogen in these soils. So that's kind of looking at a variety of different nutrients individually. The other thing we wanted to do is look at it as a whole. So what we did is we took all of the nutrient data and we looked at it in kind of an ordination space, so a kind of multivariate analysis here, similar to what we do for plant communities. But what you need to know about these ordination diagrams is the closer two points are, the more similar their nutrient profile is. And what we can see here is, again, the natural soil is quite different in terms of the nutrient profile compared to the reclamation soils. And the reclamation soils are more similar to each other. But the one thing that's a bit different is that the forest floor material is more closer to the natural soils, and it should be. It's the most natural reclamation soil that we use, and this way of looking at it kind of shows that a little bit, as the green dots are a little bit closer to the natural soils. So that's what we've tried to do, is this another way of looking at it. Rather than focusing on individual nutrients, this kind of takes all the nutrients together, and we can see how they all compare, rather than looking at them at one nutrient at a time. So the other part that we wanted to look at is look at how they vary over time. So the temporal trajectory. So this is with the temporal trajectory of the natural versus the forest floor. And if they're all moving in the same direction, now we only measured it over 3 years, so it's not really a full successional trajectory. It's maybe more annual variability. But still, if they're all moving in the same direction, that means they're likely responding to the same external factors, whether it's temperature or moisture, whether it's a wet or dry year, things like that. If they're all moving in the same direction in ordination space, that means they're likely behaving how we would expect a boreal forest soil to behave. What we can see is the forest floor material, it's all kind of moving the same directions as the natural forest soils over time, which means that that's about what we'd expect. And over time, that's probably a good signal that they are functioning as we'd expect a boreal forest to function. And over time, if they're moving, becoming close to each other, they will be... that's one indication of whether or not they're moving, if they're going in the right direction, I guess, right? If they are becoming more similar over time. It's probably not realistic to expect these drastically disturbed soils to be the same as a natural forest soil in the first few years afterwards, but if they're moving in the right direction, that's a very good sign. And forests take a long time to develop. Forest soils take a long time to develop. So that's something we have to be keeping in mind when we're evaluating success of these, I guess, is we need to take into consideration the time effect. If you look at the peat material, the green is the unfertilized, and they don't really move at all. They don't really change, so they're not really responding to the same environmental cues as the natural forest soils are. But when we fertilize them, they are. We see that when they're fertilized, they're kind of moving that same direction as the natural soils there. So maybe the fertilization kind of gets them more on a more natural trajectory. So perhaps that if we're going to fertilize, maybe fertilizing the peat soils is a better idea than fertilizing the forest floor reclamation soils. So just kind of quick operational recommendations here. But how do we build a better forest soil? We know that both the peat and the forest floor soils will be used in the final reclamation landscapes. So if we're thinking about fertilizer, maybe we should be looking at fertilizing the peat-based soil rather than the forest floor-based soil. And instead of focusing most of our fertilization on nitrogen, maybe it makes more sense to be looking at other nutrients, potentially phosphorus and potassium. And then the other part is, how do we know if we are successful? How do we know if we've done this right, looking at the ecosystem function? But I think we've showed looking at individual nutrients, but I think other approaches are looking at the whole suite of nutrients, and that ordination approach shows some promise as a way of evaluating comparison between our reclaimed and our natural systems. And then also looking at the temporal trajectories over time is another important criteria for these. With that, hopefully it's time for a couple of questions.
Okay, we have time for one question for Brad.
Just wondering what the greenhouse gas implications are using the peat amendment and taking that from wetlands where it's really saturated and stable, spreading on the top of these reclaimed sites where I would assume it's susceptible to very rapid decomposition
Yes, I would say there hasn't been as much. It hasn't decomposed nearly as quickly as we would have thought, I would say. That was kind of the what was thought as a big risk at the beginning, right? You're taking it from carbon stored in a wetland, you're putting it on top of a hill where it's going to heat up and potentially decompose much faster. But I don't have any numbers for that, but it doesn't seem to be happening nearly as quickly as people had thought it might have. So it seems to be, I don't know if it's because it's drying out. We've taken it from a wet environment and moved it to a fairly dry environment on a hillside. But it's not nearly as decomposed as we would have thought. Like after 30 years, you can still see this organic matter still in the soil. So it's probably decomposing, but it's not nearly as rapid as we thought it might have been at the beginning.
Thank you. What was the pH of those soils?
The pH of the soils when we started out at the beginning of this year, about 7.5, and it was down to around 6, about 5 years later.
So the undisturbed before was?
The undisturbed is about 5.5 to 6.
Then it went up to 7, and then they're coming down.
That's right. And so then it went up, and then it comes back down. Yep.